This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Inspiration, brave action, and heartwarming journeys. This is what the Louise H. Reed Show brings you. Now, here's your host, Louise H. Reed.
Hello, everybody. Hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending where on the world you are listening from. This is your host, Louise H. Reed. I'm broadcasting live today on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. I'd like to welcome our listeners from all over the world, 145 countries, which is amazing, and thank all of you for the downloads. There are millions of those each month. And today I have with me Doreen Hamilton, who is, like the other guests I have on the show, an incredible woman with a wonderful journey she wishes to share with all of you and with myself. And she really is a person who is not only inspirational and a positive, shines a positive light on others in this world, but she's truly embraced the notion herself of taking brave, bold action in pursuit of her own dreams and goals. I'd like to remind everyone that at the end of this show, you can find a recording of this podcast on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and iTunes, and I invite you to do that and subscribe to the show so you don't miss any future podcast recordings. So I would like to, before we hear from Doreen, share with you a little bit what I know about Doreen. So Doreen is a psychologist and is the founder of Essential Speaking and training director of Speaking Circles International. What I thought was actually pretty neat to hear, because of what Doreen specializes in, is she too once suffered from stage fright and set out to conquer the fear. So what Doreen discovered is that being present and centered in one's essential self is the key to relaxed and confident speaking. So I'm pretty excited to explore that a little bit further, and certainly excited to hear a little bit about her own stage fright. So what Doreen now does in the world is she specializes in the treatment of public speaking anxiety, and is the author of Essential Speaking, the 7-Step Guide to Finding Your Real Voice. And we'll be exploring that book today. She offers authentic communication workshops, private coaching, and online courses. Welcome to the show, Doreen.
Thank you, Louise. It's always wonderful to talk to you.
And you. I've been looking forward to this. As we connected briefly last week, I've been looking forward to this for quite a while, because we've had you booked on this date for some time now. So I'm really excited to learn more about you and share you with the listening audience. So I mentioned to you, and thank you again for sharing your book with me. I mentioned just a moment ago that I did read your book. I actually read the PDF. There's a shorter version. Share with us what that is.
That's Fearless Speaking, the 7-Step Guide, and it is a smaller version of my book, which is Essential Speaking, the 7-Step Guide to Finding Your Real Voice.
So I'll tell you why I liked this PDF. So I love reading, and I read a ton of books. And for me, reading this short document made me want to go out and go buy the book.
So
that was your goal, about giving really juicy information that is valuable and can immediately put to use. And in addition, whet the appetite to go and buy the book. You did it.
Well, you know what? I was rereading it myself last night and thinking, gee, the book has so much more juicy, rich stories and information and depth. So I had the same thought.
Well, I'm glad. And so, if, like I said, that was your goal. You certainly managed to do that. So I'd like to maybe start off by hearing a little bit about perhaps was maybe the beginning of this journey for you. Understanding, you know, your own fright in public speaking and how you sort of overcame that. Can you walk us through that?
Well, I think I've always been somewhat of an introvert, so I think that I started that way. And I think that there was a a natural kind of tendency inside of myself to be open and engaged and alive in the world. And in fact, in high school, I was pretty popular. I was the head of the pom-pom girls and cheerleaders. But it was when I got to college, I think that, and that was UC Berkeley, where there was just so many students and so the classrooms were so big, and there just seemed to be a moment where you had to prove yourself in front of all these other very, very smart kids. So I think that was the beginning of the time when I started to really shut down. And by the time I got through my PhD, I feel like I was what they say, what is it, piled higher and deeper.
I love it.
And I felt like I was totally buried. And nevertheless, I started my practice. I became a psychologist. But that's pretty safe. It's just one other person sitting across from you. So that was an easy enough kind of profession, and probably for me the right pick as being an introvert, you know, not being
right
in public. But about a couple of years into my success as a psychologist, I was asked to speak in public, and I said, oh, no, no, no.
I don't do that.
Yeah, I don't do that. And the organizer, you know, you put your hand on your hip and said, what? Aren't you a psychologist? Isn't fear your business? And with that, it was a confrontation, and that was true. I knew I was hiding. I was hiding in my office.
Right.
And there were probably more opportunities that I denied of just getting out and speaking for that reason of my fear. And hiding it seemed to be, well, I had to do what I suggest to other people, you know, face the fear.
Yeah. And it's not an easy thing to do. And I think that's what really, there's so many things I admire about you and that I'm drawn to, with you and about you. And one of them is, you know, that the fact that you are an expert in this area, you have your PhD, you are saying that you counsel others on facing that, and yet you still face that yourself. And here you are speaking to others now about that so openly. And that is such a raw, that in and of itself is a difficult thing to do. Not only are you now going to face one of your fears, which is public speaking, but you're telling people that you are afraid of public speaking.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. And it's like, I know the journey. And we could talk about that after a while, but I think that kind of trust that somebody's working with me who has been where they are.
Right. Absolutely. And so what made you, was it that conversation that you just recounted
mm-hmm.
that sort of made you realize, yeah, okay, now I need to start doing what I'm counseling others to do? Was that what started that mm-hmm. first step then?
Yeah.
So what was that first step?
That first step for me was because I had just discovered I was also diabetic. I took a training because I had all the symptoms and I didn't know that. And I was thinking, well, there are so many people out there if they only knew the symptoms. So I took a training. But at the end of that course, you had to get up and give a presentation. And actually, I couldn't do it. I didn't finish the course. I've never been out talking about diabetes to anybody except for privately or friends or family.
Right.
But so then it really proved that I needed to take another step. And in San Francisco, there was a program called the Learning Annex. This was in the 90s. And there was a class, How to Overcome Your Fear of Public Speaking. And I took that course, and there was a turning point. And that's what I would love to give people, is this moment when they go, aha. And the person who was leading the workshop said, he quoted the, what is it, from Michelangelo, that quote you might know.
Yeah.
How he found the angel in the marble. He just chiseled until he set it free. I felt like, oh, I'm the angel. I have my voice. It's locked in this marble of PhD and academic education and professionalism. But that was a moment of, okay, I know that inside my depth, my inner voice is where my power is, not in all of this image that I've created out in the world.
There's so much meaning to what you just said. And you mentioned in your book, your inner voice is the most natural and powerful asset you possess. And so I thought of that when you just described that angel that's, you know, encased in this marble. So it made me think of, you know, the power of those words in your book. As well as it reminds me of children. You know, I think that I never thought about it in this way until you just described that you were, have always been an introvert, but it wasn't until you really entered university when all of these, you know, the additional, well, your context changed. So all of a sudden now you're comparing yourself to other people who are at that higher echelon from an educational and intellectual perspective. But then you're piling on all of the knowledge, and the theory, and that our voice then gets masked or, it's hidden behind all of that. And then when we look at children, they voice their opinions and their thoughts so freely and so simply and can have such impact. I think it's interesting how, we've not taught children. I mean, we must teach children to be afraid of public speaking. That's not in your book, but what do you think of that? Is that, what's your thought on that?
Absolutely. I think one of the things I hear most of from people is that I've been this way all of my life. But I don't think that's true. You're right, that we're all born with a bright essence. And there's the context. You mentioned me being in a new context at the university, but there is the family context, the cultural context, and who knows what happened way back then. And I'm not saying blame your family. I'm just saying, when I work with people, let's go back to the beginning and do some fine tooth combing to see what some of those influences were. And that's part of the assessment that I do with people, is to go through the early childhood years and see if there are any memories. And we could talk more about some of what I've discovered there, but then the teenage years and young adulthood. And then there's also cultural messages that people get, and just the good old, you should be seen and not heard, that I still hear from people.
Yeah, that certainly was certainly part of, from the, you know, the time in which I was growing up. Thankfully for me, that wasn't something that my mom and my parents said to me, but I was very aware of that being sort of a cultural layer at the time that I grew up in. One of the reasons why I particularly like your approach as well, and on page 3 of the PDF version, so the shorter version of your book, right away, I felt myself take a deep breath of relief. And it says, seven steps to fearless speaking are based on presence, connection, and authenticity. And the reason I took a breath was because I'm like, oh, that's not hard. It might be hard to get to it.
Yes.
That's all in, that's me. That's just me. Mm-hmm. And so I was immediately thinking, I can continue to read this. I felt like, it spoke to me and it opened me up, sort of unfroze perhaps some of the thinking and beliefs we have about public speaking.
Exactly. That's really nice of you to say. And I can relate to that, because that's what I think I've discovered, is that my approach is so different than the traditional public speaking approaches, because I know those. That's part of my journey, having gone back to, what is it, Toastmasters, took more classes along the way. But getting better at speech making, getting better at vocal variety, and using gestures, yes, they all are important when you really are going to be out on a stage. But there's so many people who can't even be at a dinner table with their family, or speak with a coworker, or just raise their hand in a classroom like I did, or at a meeting. So I'm thinking that there's more than just learning how to be on a stage. There's learning how to be comfortable being yourself. And to me, that's what the seven step, or the seven secrets, as I call them, because it's so non-traditional, non-conventional, and the whole idea of being, you know, like an entertainer. No, we want to help people be more of themselves, more authentic in this world, and that they really are connected to their voice, their inner voice. Yes.
You saying that made me think of the gestures, which I have a lot of. Those listening on the radio can't see that, but certainly those watching on Facebook will always see my hands flying over the screen. Those are accessories.
Ah.
So that's what I just thought of when you said that. Because Jerry Seinfeld, do you see a lot? I don't really see a lot of hand gestures, his tone changing. But he, who does not like Jerry Seinfeld? Because he's maybe, I'm making this up right now, just thinking this, but he's totally 100% authentically, genuinely himself in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that's what's so powerful. Because he doesn't use lots of gestures.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see his tone moving up and down. Uh-huh. And so what we're drawn to is just the essence of who he is and what he has to say.
I like what you just said, the drawn to. Because that, I think, that magnetic quality that somebody, if they really are in their essence, it feels to me there's a resonance there.
Huh.
And that people then are drawn to that authentic resonance.
Interesting, because I think we can't always explain why, speaking of this drawn to, we can't always explain why we are drawn to or feel some connection with someone, can we? It's hard to actually put your finger on it, but it's, in the essence, it sounds like that's what we're trying to do, or what you're trying to do with this seven steps to feel.
Yeah.
Love it. So let's explore it. Where do you want to start with this?
Where I start, step number one or secret number one, and this is what's so exciting about people who come to my program, is that every one of my secrets starts with B, B-E, B. So the first secret is be silent. And, you know, they're coming to my workshop or my private coaching and saying, aren't we talking about speaking?
Isn't that anti what we're trying to achieve here?
Yeah. Well, it's one of the biggest fears that people have is of going blank, of becoming totally silent, losing their train of thought. So it seems to be like if we can get really comfortable going into the blank space with no words, absolutely no words, then we're in this moment of inner stillness where there isn't fear. It's kind of like what meditators do. They're just meditating. They're calm. There's a quiet inside. You know, there isn't anxiety. They're just there in the stillness. And people talk, you know, the still point inside. That to me feels like a very powerful foundational moment, is to be able to, just in the snap of a finger, just in the, you know, like the beginning of a contraction of fear, to be able to go deep breath down into silence where the body just automatically knows what calm, relaxed feels like.
Sounds wonderful.
Mm. It's almost trance-like, isn't it?
I kind of feel like that.
Right? I know, I saw it in your face.
Because, and I think that's not only what you're saying, but it's also how you're speaking to me. That it creates that nurturing calm. I feel safe in what you're saying because of the expertise and experience you bring. It's like, I can trust Doreen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, you know, having worked with coaches for a number of years now and absolutely believing that I will never be without a coach, that's the benefit of choosing someone to work alongside you to support you in your efforts to grow and develop in a certain area, right?
Yeah.
So someone needing to improve in this area, they put all their faith and trust in you. And that in and of itself is relieving, that someone has got your back, so to speak, in that area and can guide you. And being able to put that trust in someone is very significant. So that was the face that you just saw. So what would someone do then? How do you, when do you do this? Do you do this sort of as you're preparing, as you're getting better at the idea of public speaking? Do you do this at different points during a public speaking engagement? That being silent, is it just a practice to get you comfortable in front of the audience? So tell me a little bit more about how that's used.
Well, first it has to be discovered and claimed.
Okay.
So first it seems like however people do that, I don't say go do a particular technique because
right.
Some people do yoga, some people do meditation, some people walk in the woods. What is your quiet space inside? And be able to grow that, keep practicing coming
okay.
back to silence. And it's like an inner muscle so that when they know they have that capacity and then when, well, for instance, this morning I couldn't find the link to our call. And my heart was starting to beat pretty fast and it was like 5 minutes of and I took my deep breath and instantly know that inside of my gut is a quiet, calm place. You know, it's just like, that's the root. And so the rooting to me feels like any time that I'm either about to go speak or that anytime I feel like that anxiety about the heart starting to race or the red cheeks or the sweaty palms that people talk about, that they go, oh, that's, we call it signal anxiety. Oh, that's the signal. I need to take a breath, go down, down, down.
Wow.
And so you say before, during, or whenever, I think that even on a stage or even in a meeting, you could take a breath. It's a pause, isn't it? You know, it's like a sentence, period. Pause, breath, and then it's a being able to land in that quiet inner stillness.
So powerful. So it sounds to me like whenever you feel those cues, you comment, you gave it a label to the heart beating fast, sweaty palms, face being flushed. Whenever you feel that it could be a signal then to get in touch with your stillness.
Yes, it's like a training. You know, you need to train your body to realize that anxiety signal that you get isn't going to go out of control, because that's what people fear most is that, uh-oh, here it comes. And then they leave their bodies, their throat tightens. There's a whole, you know, sequence that takes them in further down the anxiety road, and I want to have that signal take them to the calm road.
It's interesting. One of my boys has quite a number of learning disabilities, and I call them learning differences. Someone asked him if he had learning disabilities last year, and he said no. He was actually like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
He's always called them learning different, but we've always called them learning differences. Anyway,
right.
And so we've had to use some of these techniques as well with him. And it's amazing how, like you said, this might be, you know, how versatile these techniques are. So a client of yours might be learning these techniques with you for the purpose of public speaking. Yet
yes.
They find they may use them with their children when they feel that heart starting to accelerate because they've just got a bad report card or they're having a conflict conversation with their spouse or at work. So I think that's a really interesting facet of this very first step of your program.
Yes. In fact, my tagline says, find your voice, change your life.
True.
It's not just going on stage.
It's not. So something else you wrote in your book is, in fact, when you find your real voice, you find the courage and confidence to be who you are and live more fully in both your professional and personal life. And I highlighted that.
Yes.
Because that was really powerful. This was really powerful to me. It's not just, and I'm saying that in quotes, you know, it's not just a course about learning how to speak publicly.
Exactly. On a stage. In fact, just speaking to one, you and I are on a stage now in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, not because whoever's listening, but it's just we're together, and this is, I'm not by myself, I'm with you, so yeah. This is public.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so be silent is step one to fearless speaking. What would step two be, Doreen?
Be present.
Okay, and so tell us about being present. What does that mean, and how do we do it?
Well, the people that I work with often have traumatic memories or just have a childhood where they were, like we talked about, seen, not heard. Maybe they had siblings who were more verbal or parents who were strict and just didn't pay attention or were neglectful. For whatever the causes of anxiety, they remember it and it's in the past.
Right.
Then they think that they're going to repeat it in the future. So they're plagued by the past and the future rather than just being in the here and now. And this is a huge part of the training, is how to just keep coming back to now, how to just keep coming back to now. And when you're thinking about the future and you're projecting a bad outcome, look at what you're doing. It's like there's a window you could look at, and that's true. Or you could look out another window. That could be true. And it's basically, though, coming back to focusing on, let's say I'm looking over at my piano right now, the lamp. Taking my breath, coming back to the first step, silence. Ah, I'm here now. So it relieves anxiety all the way to the point of where you think you're going to have to be giving your talk or speak up.
I remember reading once that fear and calmness, or anxiety and calmness, cannot coexist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really, that was powerful to me to hear that. And I was reminded of that when you're talking about, you know, the stillness of now.
Yes.
And being silent, because that eliminates that, you've already said it eliminates that anxiety. Both cannot be there. So the power is in the now.
Yes.
I understand that. I wrote down a question. How does this relate to fearless speaking? But you've absolutely walked us through that.
Uh-huh.
How does this contrast with other courses that you've taken? Why is yours different, and why did you create it this way?
Well, I think that, as I said, a lot of the Toastmasters was about how to give a speech. And I think it was a wonderful training, but I got awards. You know, I had contests and I won awards, went to regional, district. Yeah. But I knew, the truth was, I knew that inside of my gut that I was still hiding my fear.
Okay.
I still, you know, they talk about getting your butterflies in formation. I didn't want to have butterflies. I just wanted to be free to be open and speak. And what I found was a process founded by Lee Glickstein called Speaking Circles International. And in that process, people are surrounded by positive essence, appreciation, and you don't have to speak.
Wow.
You take turns in front of a group of positive, supportive listeners. Nobody's telling you you shouldn't cross your arms, you shouldn't stand cross-legged. They're all just looking deeper into your, you might say, soul, your spirit,
yeah,
your essence.
Yeah.
And in that way, I felt like, I could finally discover who I am. Nobody's trying to make me into a dynamic speaker. All they are doing is trying to help me find my voice. And that was the beginning, I think, of knowing that this was a truer path for people, and I became training director of Speaking Circles International. I've traveled all around the world training facilitators in this process.
I think it's absolutely beautiful. Despite the fact that I already read, a sentence or two from one of the first pages of your book, you just did it to me again in the way you described going to those speaking circles. The idea of going to a speaking circle and knowing that you have to speak, I bet you, and that's not the case in your situation.
Right.
In other trainings, you're probably feeling anxiety on the way driving to the training. I can imagine that myself. Whereas knowing that the purpose of this is something completely different, you're actually even entering the training with a completely different mindset is what I'm imagining as you're sharing this with me. That's how mm-hmm. I'm picturing the contrast between the two.
Yes. And nevertheless, though, people who have made the choice and feel like they're really ready to face their fear, so they pick speaking circles because it seems a kinder, gentler approach, they still experience a lot of anxiety, still think, because that's how they've been trained, that they have to speak. And I do work privately with people who don't feel like they could even do that.
Right.
So I train them in my 7 steps, and then if they want to go into the group, that's how I then usher them into the group and help them practice what I'm teaching in a group or one of my workshops.
Right. Well, we're all in a different journey, aren't we? And yeah. So there's a continuum, yes. No doubt, of where we're all at on our fear scale as it comes to public speaking. And so it sounds like you're attempting to meet people where they're at to support them in the reaching of their goals.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so, I even work with professional speakers who already have their canned speech.
Yeah.
Or, you know, already have been on stage, but don't feel like they really are engaging, connecting as much as they feel like that's possible for them. So I work with you're right, the whole range of somebody who can never see themselves ever feeling comfortable to somebody who's already out there on stage. Yeah.
And like you described, you were winning awards.
Yes.
But the essence of who you were, you weren't displaying that as much as you wanted. And that's why I think it's just so neat about what you do. And what really attracted me to have a conversation with you about what you do on the show. So step number 3, share with us what step 3 is. So we be silent, be present.
And then how I do that is it's around the eyes, be available. And in our society, of course, eyes are something that we don't look eye to eye to people. And I don't call this eye contact. I call it either eye connection or eye presence. And it's about having your eyes just be softly available.
Okay.
And, you know, most traditional programs say, look at a spot on the forehead or look at a spot on the back of the wall. Wow, they miss the beauty. Just like looking at you right now, Louise, it's like I see your eyes, and your eyes are bright and shiny, and I know that behind your eyes is your heart and your spirit, and that's what I'm speaking with. And if I train people how to really see beyond these little open holes in the head to the real person inside, then there isn't fear. So it's another angle at helping people overcome seeing and being seen.
You know, I'm finding it humorous as you're saying this, because it actually seems so obvious, but it is so counter, or it is a very different perspective than I think, I know certainly I and others have heard about public speaking. Having worked in HR, that was my past life before I started my own business and radio show, I designed and delivered training on the stuff that you're talking about. So those listening right now who may have been in any of my training programs, I'm apologizing and just thankful that I've been part of your journey. And let's see if we can engage Doreen. Something you wrote in your book on this step 3 that I really liked. You wrote, to look directly at another and be seen gives you strength and makes it easier to be the center of attention.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I just think that's beautiful and really creates true connection with the audience, which is what you're talking about.
Yes. Yes. You know, I hear mostly too that, ooh, I can't be in the center of the spotlight. In the spotlight are all these eyes, you know, coming at them, and they feel like they're being judged. But when you're comfortable being yourself, and when you're comfortable being able to look at another person in the eyes, it seems like a lot of that fear dissolves naturally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just want to pause for a moment and just welcome any new listeners we have to the show. This is Louise H. Reed Show, and today I have a wonderful guest. I feel very grateful and thankful to have Doreen Hamilton, who is a PhD and expert in many things, but talking to us today about the 7-step guide to fearless speaking. So we've been exploring those 7 steps and sharing some stories in between. And we are now moving to step 4, which is what, Doreen?
Be listening.
Be listening.
And so again, you know, people are saying, hey, aren't we talking about speaking? No. I think this is every aspect of this program that I've designed, I think, is really rich with new possibilities. So the whole idea, turning speaking around to listening. So if you know what silence is, if you know how to be present, and if you're able to really be softly available with your eyes and not afraid to look, then listening becomes so much easier in a way that then adds to what it is that comes through in terms of speaking. And this is one that's hard when you're standing in front of a whole group and people are looking at you and they say, well, how do I listen? Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be speaking. So that it's a whole different way of calming yourself by thinking of yourself as a listener up there. You're listening to people listen to you. And just because they're in your audience doesn't mean they're listening.
No. So
attention. Why not really listen to your audience or your listener, like I am with you right now? It's not a, well, are they, you know, are they spaced out somewhere, or it's not reading body language. It's really engaging in this deeper way of saying, hello, we're having a conversation. I'm listening to you, even though I'm speaking to you. We do this one-on-one, don't we, all the time?
Absolutely.
And this is the same way with groups, just being able to, you might say, stop, look, and listen.
Yeah.
Before you speak.
I think then that makes I'm imagining this, and I think we all have had experiences where we have been part of a group, where we've had this experience where it feels like someone is with us versus speaking at us.
Yes.
We probably had both, and mm-hmm. have not been able to really articulate why mm-hmm. we've had why one speaker gave us one experience and why another speaker gave us a different experience. And so I think that's what I'm reflecting on mm-hmm. as you're sharing, because it's starting to unpack that. Mm-hmm. Not only as a speaker, but as a listener. I think sometimes it's easier to put yourself in the listener's shoes while trying to grasp these concepts. So that's what I've been doing somewhat. Because we've got many, many examples where we reflect on these learning points, right?
Yes. Listening, you know, and when I'm leading a group and I have somebody in front who then, when I'm speaking to them, of course they go into a listening mode, and then I'll say, see group right there. That's where the listening is. See the difference between, you know, maybe just a few minutes before the person had been speaking. And then when they go into listening, they're so much more receptive. They're receiving their listeners. And so that's one way I teach it, is to demonstrate to people what the difference looks like, just like you said. Yes.
Right. Because it's not really – so when you're public speaking, you're not really mm-hmm. up there just to go through your content.
No. You're there to engage.
Engage. A subtle but massive difference, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how do you – we have listeners right now who perhaps they are public speakers themselves, and they are listening to this and may feel somewhat gobsmacked because it is a bit of a different approach, as you're saying. What would you recommend they do right now? What's beyond getting your book, which I will say that. I will absolutely say that. To first and foremost, check Doreen Hamilton out. Doreen Hamilton's website is what, Doreen? Can you share that with us?
EssentialSpeaking.com.
I have read her ebook, not the ebook, the PDF. Is that available on your website?
Yes.
Okay. Download that, friends. And I assure you that will whet your appetite for more. It certainly has for me. And so we've just finished step four, be listening. And thank you, Doreen, for letting me go and flit about a little bit and get you somewhat off track. We've got step five now. Let's talk about that.
Be positive.
All right. Tell us more about be positive.
Well, and it is a little bit different than what you might think also. All of them are a little bit different, right? It's not just go out and put on a smile and lift up your arms and say, hello. But it is about knowing your core essence qualities. When I started this work, the kind of essence appreciation I was getting is that I'm warm and that I have a big heart. And so that when I go out in front of a group, let's say, I know my warmth. I know I have a big heart. So that I know that I'm speaking from there. So that's what I mean about being who you really are in terms of your natural spirit, your natural essence qualities. And you have to claim those. And partly what happens in the groups I lead is to have the group give essence appreciation, not positive quality. It's really about, oh, you're bright, you're warm, you're powerful. And people sometimes have a hard time taking that because they feel like, oh, that's not who I am. So what I do at this stage, especially privately with people, is work on self-esteem.
Okay.
It's even deeper than self-esteem because it's not just this is a sense of who I am. It's this is really the truth of who I am.
Right. Really pulling back the layers, the multi layers of the onion.
Right. All the personality stuff down to this is my core. And this is about authenticity then. And then how it works with how you are reducing fear in the audience. It goes back to being able to look at somebody and being able to say, oh, that person is really a beautiful person. You know, rather than, ooh, that person's looking at me funny. Ooh, that person's disinterested. Oh, that person's judging me. If you're able to look into somebody's essence as a speaker and you're looking out at an audience and you're able to, they're like little stars that are starting to shine out there and you're going, oh, and you're able to speak to one star at a time and pretty soon there isn't judgment in the room because you've actually transformed the room into, a group of deep listeners.
Wow. This is very, very empowering. It's not a set of skills you need to learn. It's actually, and I know you've said this in a variety of ways, it's really tapping into the true essence of who you are and how to remain centered so that can shine.
Yes.
It's quite remarkable. So step six, let's hear a little bit about that.
Be connected.
Okay. So what does that mean?
It's not eye contact.
It's not staring at that imaginary circle on dot on the forehead. So what does it mean then?
Well, if you've gone through all the steps up to this point, that there's an ability to have developed this inner presence muscle and you're relaxed with the eyes and you're in a connection with yourself, your deepest self, your essence, and you're able to be comfortable expressing yourself, you do it one person at a time. One person at a time. And in a lot of trainings, they say, just tap here, 3 seconds here, 3 seconds here, you know, like to just flit. And
scanning, to be scanning the room that way, okay?
Right. Instead, look at, be with, engage with one person at a time. One person at a time means that you've got the connection already there with them. And it's like a conversation. You're having a conversation with one person at a time. And that's what I mean by connect.
Wow. Okay. What do you do when you're in a room of 1,000 people?
Well, and then people have also, what if the lights are blinding and you can't see anybody? Yeah. If you develop this ability to know that there's a one person out there, you go to that area of the room and just really engage with that corner of the room and then maybe with the back of the room. You stay longer than what most people think is okay. Comfortable, but then it makes that little community of people, whatever, who's ever gathered back there, feel like they're being seen and heard. You know, that's again, the whole opposite. You're making the listener feel seen and heard. And I have worked with blind people. So this ability to engage with one person or one part of the group at a time works.
I guess it's because you're talking about, you're speaking from the essence of you, who you are, and you're sort of speaking to the soul of the others. So whether you see them or you don't see them, they are there. That soul mm-hmm. is there.
It's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, so I myself, I won't say who it was someone who I actually really admire. I love a lot of her books. I was thrilled to go and see her speak in Montreal in February. And I was devastated by the experience because mm-hmm. I felt, and I didn't really realize why until I'm just speaking with you. And that was because I heard all of that stuff before on a podcast and read it in her books. Mm-hmm. So I got nothing different from that. And I was up in the balcony, like way, way high. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I'm hypothesizing here, bless her heart. I'm hypothesizing that had she perhaps engaged in that kind of, mm-hmm. Connection, that I may not have felt that way. I wasn't looking for information. I had all her information. I'd read all her books. I was going there obviously for connection.
Yes.
And I didn't get that.
Yes. That's about being in the moment, being really present with whoever's in the audience.
Yeah.
And sometimes, well, I lead groups every week. So, and I don't come in, or I lead workshops, and I don't come in with the same thing. Sometimes I don't even know what's going to happen or what I'm going to say during the day, because it's definitely based on who's there and who's struggling with what in the moment.
Right.
And it's really fun to be actually know what I'm trying to reach in people, but to do it in all different ways, depending on what they present.
To be flexible in the how.
Yes. Yes.
So the last step of your 7-step guide to fearlessly speaking is be yourself. So tell us about that.
You can see how all that adds up, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
To be yourself, because a lot of, when I read some of the articles on public speaking, they say, well, all you have to do is be yourself. And I'm sure that it's like, well, how do you do that? And what does that mean? And as a psychologist, that's always, you know, 35 years, that's always been my business, is helping people find who they really are. And now I'm just doing it specifically around speaking. But to me, the whole training that I've talked about today is about leading you to know who you really are at your core, so that you do have a voice and that you can show up any place, any time, and have a voice, speak, and be who you are.
I think that the on the other side of that is about that connection. And I know you talk about that through your program, but that's what's been so powerful for me. It's not actually just speaking who the true essence, not sharing the true essence of you, but it's also that meaningful connection that results. I wasn't expecting that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting that when I picked up your book. And isn't that really what makes the human experience mm-hmm. so joyful and wonderful and rich?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I went to Vienna with my dad a couple of years ago. He was going on a business trip. My mom always accompanied him. And this one time my mom couldn't go, so I jumped at the chance to go with him. My dad is just like this wonderful man. And when I'm together with my parents, my mom and I pretty much don't stop talking. So my dad doesn't really get, I don't get a lot of alone time with my dad. And when we went there, I enjoyed my first day or two exploring Vienna on my own. But then my dad, because he was on conference, was busy during the days. It just reminded me that, yeah, having alone time is good, but life is about experiencing and truly connecting with the people that you love and care about and being able to communicate with them. So it brought me back to that. Mm-hmm. Even though we're talking about different kind of experience, This book remind, your book really, and your process reminded me of that. It's not just about speaking out. It's that, that engagement with.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Just beautiful. So we've talked a little bit, a lot about your book. I want to know through all of this, through your life in general, what's the biggest lesson you've learned?
Oh, I think the biggest lesson starts from that quote I talked about the angel and the marble. And that's what I believe everybody has inside of them, is this beautiful spirit. And I want to chip away at all the training, the societal training about how to fit in and how to be accepted and to find the beauty within and the true essence within, and to be able to have that be the voice.
That's beautiful. I'm capturing that. I'm taking note of that, because I think that's really, really powerful, and it's certainly something I'd like to continue to go back to at different points and in my life. And if I may very well share that with some of my own coaching clients.
Well, absolutely. I think that for people who do have anxiety about speaking, to be able to know that the path to their inner self is where their power is. It's not about more techniques, yeah, more performance techniques. No, it's about finding the truth of who you are. And that's a process.
Yeah,
you don't get a tip.
No, there's a quote that I love, is happiness is an inside job.
Yes.
And I think that really relates to everything, doesn't it?
Yes.
That's really where it all starts. So this is more of a random type question, because I'm just curious about you, who is so self sort of centered and grounded. You mentioned at the beginning of the show how you did feel some anxiety, and you know how to bring that right back to yourself, right back to your core and your center. But do you have any other tools or rituals in your daily life or your work day that you really feel like you could not live without?
Well, I think it's mostly just breathing. That to me would be the biggest message, is that I have that available to me every single second of the day. And sometimes when I live in the San Francisco Bay Area and I go across the bridge to my office in Berkeley, and I just am admiring the beauty around me. You were talking about the travel with your father, and it just feels like we're always traveling. We're always in the now. We're always open to receiving what's around us and engaging with life. So I would say that just being in life, being in the moment, is what I try and always remember.
And going back to children again, perhaps it's because my children still are a little bit younger. So far, this is my favorite age that they've been. I've got 12-year-old twins, a 13-year-old and a 14-year-old. And they remind us to, you know, when you see, they remind us to be in the present, I find. And when you see life through a child's eye, it reminds you to take that breath and be present. Reminds me anyway.
Yes.
And so, my children right now are certainly the little people who have a big impact on my life, who inspire me the most to be the best version of me. Who inspires you?
Oh my.
That's a big question. I know.
I would say actually the first person who comes to my mind is my husband.
And why is that? I love that answer. And why is
that? Let's see. I'm somebody who waited until the right person came along, and he is the right person. And we got married my first time at age 60, believe it or not. And
love it, Doreen.
He's all the things that I'm talking about, just the most positive, spirited, and bright, talented, loving, pure loving human being, and we're a great match.
And what a beautiful way to start wrapping up the show. I can't believe we've got 2 minutes left, Doreen. I want to quickly ask you, though, you've got a special birthday.
Yes.
I want to wish you a happy birthday this week, so tell us what's going on this week. Is it this weekend?
We just had it. In fact, my husband and I are both 70 this weekend, and we had over 100 people coming in. And the whole idea was to bring people from all aspects, all corners of our life together and have this beautiful mix of humanity of our lives.
And was it that for you, Doreen? Was
yes.
it? I'm so happy for you. I wish you and your husband a very, very happy birthday and much joy ahead, in the next year. I'd also like to thank you so much for your time and for just sharing so openly and authentically with myself and with our listeners today.
Yes. Thank you, Louise. You're fabulous.
Thank you so much. And it's my pleasure. And then with that, I'd also like to thank all of you, my loyal listeners and followers. I remind you again that information about my radio show and guests can be found at louisehreed.com. As always, I'd love to give a big shout out to my producer, Cameron Steele. I think you're awesome and wonderful, and I appreciate you. And finally, I'm here to showcase and highlight people who are taking brave, bold action, whose actions have a positive impact in our world. And with that said, I would like to encourage you all to be brave, be bold, and be happy. Until next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'm Louise H. Reed, wishing you an amazing day.